What is it you're most fearful about at the moment? Sickness, death, ongoing provision? And what would bring you comfort or bring comfort to you in this to help ease your fears? More knowledge, a known cure, certain promises that all will be okay, the economy will boom again? And where do you look to for your comfort? The news, government, your family, your bank account, your physical health? Yet what this passage in Exodus 40 reveals that for us as believers, our greatest comfort, our greatest help, our greatest hope, both in times of uncertainty and in times of just life generally, is in the comfort of having the presence of God with us. We reach the end of our studies in Exodus this morning, and we reach this great climax, this great pinnacle. There's been many heights, as it were, along the way, but actually none like this. Because here we discover the God who dwells with his people and the God who leads his people. Have a look with me. So first, then, the God who dwells with us, verse 34 and 35. Tabernacle has been completed, it's been set up. So just look up, verse 33, chapter 40. Moses finished the work. This lavish, beautiful tabernacle that has used the most precious of materials. It's been weaved and sewn and put together by skilled laborers. It's finally ready. Place for the Lord to dwell and to meet with his people and for sins to be forgiven and atoned for. And there it sat in the middle of the camp for all to see. But would the Lord be pleased with it? Would he dwell in their presence, in the presence of this sinful people? A people who had rebelled, a people who had worshipped a golden calf, a people who had grumbled and complained. Would God dwell amongst such people? Well, they don't have long to wait to find out. For verse 34, then the cloud covered the tent of meeting, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. Cloud indicated the presence of God. How does an invisible God manifest his presence? Well, here he chose a cloud to symbolize his very presence. It was the same cloud that sat upon Mount Sinai when God had spoken with his people in Exodus 19. Or when God had met with Moses on Mount Sinai in Exodus 33. It was the same cloud that had covered the tent of meeting where Moses had met with God outside of the camp. And this same cloud now covered the tabernacle. It had gone from being up high on a mountain, from being outside of the camp, to now being in the middle of the camp, at the heart of the Israelites. God had gone from being distant to intimate and central. God had gone from, in effect, self-isolation to being present and amongst, just as he had promised. So Exodus 29, verse 45, he'd said, then I will dwell among the Israelites and be their God. They will know that I am their God. He had re-promised this after the golden calf debacle of the people's rebellion. God had promised again to Moses, Exodus 33, verse 14, my presence will go with you. I will give you rest. And here it is now, the certainty of his presence. He had fulfilled, he'd kept his word. Not only had he saved them, he had brought them to himself and now dwelt in their midst. I mean, think back to the beginning of Exodus chapter 1. The people enslaved in Egypt, their children being murdered. You know, they're crying out to God to save them, to then God saving his people in these miraculous ways through the plagues and the Red Sea and through battles, and God providing for and keeping his people along the way. And at times it looked as if their rebellion and their grumbling would end it all. And here they are now with the living God dwelling in their presence, his glory displayed to all, his splendor majestically revealed. And although he may have been amongst them, there was still very much social distancing. He may be present, but this did not mean he was not holy. that you could just waltz on in. His glory now filled the tabernacle. God, in all his splendor, in all who he was, filled every aspect of the tabernacle. Now, after this initial filling, the Lord's glory would recede to just the Holy of Holies. But now it filled the whole tabernacle. So much so that not even Moses could enter the tabernacle, verse 35. Even though just moments before or days before, Moses had kind of wandered through every aspect of the tabernacle, inspecting it and setting it up. And God's making the point, this is now my home. This is set aside for me. It's holy. Imagine if you just settled into your newly built home. You're resting in the lounge, you're relaxing, and the builder just popped on in using his keys. What would you say? You'd say, okay, well, you built it, yes, but we own it. It's now our home, and you come according to our rules now. You can't just waltz on in. That's what's happening here. Moses built it. Moses is a faithful servant, but he can't just enter now. God's holiness, God's glory so filled every part of it that from now on, not even the builder can just enter as he pleases. And yet, although there's this sense of distance, this sense of stay away, we miss the welcome. We miss it because of the way our Bibles are set out. But if you turn the page with me to Leviticus 1 verse 1, which falls as part of this scene, what do you read? Have a look. The Lord called to Moses and spoke to him from the tent of meeting. He said, speak to the Israelites and say to them, when anyone among you brings an offering to the Lord, bring as your offering an animal from either the herd or the flocks. In other words, you're welcome to enter. You're welcome to come into my house, but you must do so, as we saw last week, according to my plans. You may not worship how you want. You can't just waltz into my presence, and only priests and high priests can enter into the holy and the holy of holies, but you can come. You're welcome into my house. And Leviticus kind of spells out the various animal sacrifices and the means and ways of forgiveness for them to be able to come into God's presence and for God to dwell in their presence. They're welcome. God had made it possible for him to be amongst his people. And can you imagine what it must have been like that day? To see God's glory descend on that tabernacle, to see the living God dwell amongst you, and to know you're welcome. To know he's your God and you're his people, and you can visibly, as it were, see his presence amongst you. I mean, no other nation could claim that. No other nation could point to a cloud or a visible symbol of the presence of their God, because the living God only dwelt among the Israelites. And as they lived before him and with him present amongst them, that the world was meant to see, to witness, Yahweh is the one true living God. Yahweh, the God of the Israelites, is a God who yearns to be and dwells amongst his people, those whom he loves. And you're welcome. And that kind of welcome was extended and offered to the nations of the world. You're welcome. You're welcome to become part of this people. You're welcome to become and enjoy the presence of the living God. But you must do so as I decree. And once the Israelites were settled in the land, the tabernacle would eventually be replaced by the temple in Jerusalem built by Solomon. And in 1 Kings 8:10, when the temple is built, the cloud, the glory of the Lord fills the temple in the way it had that day in the wilderness in Exodus 40. And the temple would serve the same purposes as the tabernacle, making it possible for the people to be forgiven and for them to come into the presence of God and for him to dwell amongst them. And it would draw in the nations. Think of Queen Sheba coming and visiting Solomon. But sadly, the people's ongoing rebellion and disobedience would also persist. And in spite of warning after warning by prophet after prophet and God's discipline, it eventually led them to being exiled, kicked out of the land, just as God had decreed. And then we read in Ezekiel 10 how the glory of God departed the temple. The cloud left. The glory went. The temple became an empty home and was eventually destroyed by Babylon. It'd be rebuilt by Nehemiah and Ezra, but it was never the same. I mean, how could God dwell with his people? How would the people come and meet with God once more? How would the promises that were seen to be in Exodus and Genesis be fulfilled? Because one day, God came again. And his glory was displayed once more. But this time his presence is not going to be seen in a cloud, but incarnate and in the flesh as one of us. As we read how Jesus in John 1:14, the Word became flesh and made his dwelling amongst us. He tabernacled, he pitched his tent with us. And John writes that we've seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. And then, rather remarkably, Jesus then begins to speak of the temple. A temple that the Jews were so proud of, a temple that had been rebuilt again by Herod. And yet God's glory and dwelling wasn't present within. And Jesus says of this temple in John 2:19, destroy this temple, I will raise it again in 3 days. And they reply, it's taken 46 years to build this temple, and you're going to raise it in 3 days? And John notes, but the temple he had spoken of was his body. In Matthew 12:6, Jesus says, I tell you something greater than the temple is here. Greater than the tabernacle. Referring to himself. Greater because God's presence, his dwelling, his glory was now not in a building. Wasn't in a tent in the middle of the wilderness, but it was now in his Son, the one whom the tabernacle and the temple pointed to. See, Jesus is the true tabernacle. Jesus is the place where God meets with his people. Jesus is the place where God's glory is revealed, as Jesus reveals God's glory in his love and in his holiness and his beauty and his justice, in his grace and in his mercy. And that glory was then most wonderfully displayed on the cross. Because Jesus is not only the tabernacle, the place to meet with God, he's also the sacrifice. And on the cross, as he dies, he bears the punishment for our sin, for our disobedience. And he brings forgiveness and welcome to all who would trust him and believe in him. For those who do, they're welcome. For those who are trusting in Jesus, they'd be welcome to stand and dwell in his very presence, not at a distance, not in the outer courtyard of a tabernacle that they had helped make, not even into the holy place, which was just limited to priests. But now they're welcome into the very throne room of God, the Holy of Holies, and to live with and be before him in the new heavens and the new earth, delighting and rejoicing in him. And with all that has ruined and hindered that relationship removed forever, sin and death, and suffering, and COVID-19. And with the Lord God himself wiping away our tears, social distancing completely removed. The living God dwelling with his people, unhindered, unveiled, in perfect paradise, with abundance, the promised land. With his glory fully revealed and his splendor for all to see and for him to be enjoyed in intimate relationship and presence. That was the goal of Exodus. That's the goal of creation. That's the goal for us. For God to dwell with his people intimately and for his people to enjoy him. Not the gifts, not the good that he provides, but him. In the way that we might enjoy our spouse and our families, but greater. In Jesus, we're able to meet with God and then dwell with him forever. So do you know and believe in Jesus? See, are you certain that you'll dwell with him for all eternity? If not, let me encourage you to put your trust in him, especially in these uncertain days. And if you want to find out more, then why not join us on our Christianity Explore course on a Wednesday evening? But whatever you do, don't keep putting it off. Come and meet God by coming to Jesus and then being able to dwell with him forever. But how do we enjoy his presence now? I mean, it's great that we can look forward to a day when I can be with him forever when I die, but how do I enjoy his presence now? How do I meet with Jesus and God now? Well, Ephesians chapter 2, verses 21 to 22 says this. In Jesus, the whole building is joined together and rises to become a holy temple in the Lord. And in him, you too are being built together to become a dwelling in which God lives by his Spirit. And Paul, the author of Ephesians, is talking about the church. He's talking about how Jew and Gentile are united in Jesus as a building, a kind of metaphor. And he's saying that the place where people can meet God is no longer the tabernacle or the temple that replaced it. Church is now the place where people meet God as we proclaim him and live out the gospel. Tim Chester writes, people need to update their address books. God's address is no longer the tabernacle, you know, Sinai wilderness, or the temple, Jerusalem, Israel. God's address is our church, our town, your church, your town. It's Christ Church. And as we gather together, the living God is present amongst us, says Paul, speaking to us through his word, hearing the prayers of his people, such that we can really hear from and meet with God. And as we gather, we display his glory to a watching world as we proclaim the gospel and sing his praises. But then Paul goes further. He then says in 1 Corinthians 6, 19 to 20, he says, each believer, you and I, those trusting in Jesus, are the temple of the Holy Spirit. He dwells in us. In every believer, he dwells. So not only as we gather do we meet with God, but as a believer I can meet with God. And as I open the Bible and as I pray, I can commune with and relate to and have intimate fellowship with the living God. He dwells in us. No other religion claims such a truth. No other religion does the Spirit of the living God dwell in each believer. I mean, do you see the remarkable truth? We as believers know God intimately. And as we live out our lives, therefore, we're called to display his glory in the way the tabernacle did or the church does as it gathers. We're meant to reveal his glory and his splendor to those around us as we proclaim the gospel and as we live out our lives. So do we? The living God dwells within us, not in a tent or a temple, but us. And as we gather together, he dwells with us and amongst us. People can meet and know the Lord Jesus intimately. I mean, this therefore kind of challenges how we live, doesn't it? As temples of the living God. You know, when we gather as people, are we displaying his glory in what we do and how we speak? As we live our lives, are we doing that? The living God dwells within us. And because the living God dwells within us, he now leads his people. Have a look with me at verses 36 to 38. Our second point, the living God leads us. Now be assured, this second point is much shorter. In many ways, it's just an application. point of what we've been seeing already. You know, if the living God dwells with us, then of course he's going to lead us and be with us, isn't he? And that's what you see here, verse 36. In all the travels of the Israelites, whenever the cloud lifted from above the tabernacle, they were set out. But if the cloud did not lift, they did not set out until the day it lifted. So the cloud of the Lord was over the tabernacle by day, and fire was in the cloud by night, in the sight of all the Israelites during all their travels. Note the repetition. In all their travels begins and ends this section. And what were all their travels? Well, their journey to the promised land. And the Lord would end up leading them in this way for over 40 years until they entered the promised land and their travels were over. Now imagine you're an Israelite and you hear this and you experience that of verse 35 to 38. You know the journey to the promised land is full of danger. You know, there were those whose nations who opposed you and hated you, whose land you were about to inherit. You're traveling through the desert and the wilderness, no easy thing in of itself with the dangers it presented, hunger and thirst and bandits and, oh, how do you know the way? But you look up, and you see the cloud during the day and the fire within it during the night, and you know the Lord is present. God promises his people, Deuteronomy 31, that never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. And as they looked, they could know he'd get them there. He would safely take them and bring them to the promised land. All they had to do was rest, wait, and what? Keeping their eyes turned upward and fixed on their presiding God. They had nothing to be fearful of or be concerned with. He knew the way. He was with them, so what was there to fear or be anxious about? Who could harm them? He would provide for them. And every time fears crept in, all they had to do was look up, see the cloud, see the fire, know for certain their God was dwelling with them and leading them safely home. That's what he promised. And friends, is that not still true for God's people today? That he promises in all our travels, that is through all of our lives, if we're trusting him, if we're his people, he promises to lead us safely home, to lead us safely to the new heavens and the new earth and to be with him for all eternity. And that promise is certain and yes, because of Jesus. Because of his death upon the cross and the sending of his spirit that dwells within us, who Paul says, Ephesians 1:10, acts as a deposit guaranteeing our inheritance. He dwells in us. We can be absolutely certain he'll lead us home. He dwells within me. But you see, it's not a promise for an easy life or an easy journey. There's going to be hard days and trials and tribulations and difficulty. But he promises that through such days, to lead us, to keep us, to sustain us, to provide for us, to give us the grace and the mercy that we need. So we can hear the promises of John 10:29, no one can snatch me from your hand. Or Romans 8:35, nothing can separate us from the love of God. Or think about the language of the psalmist. You know, Psalm 23, the Lord's our shepherd. The one who will lead us through the darkest valleys, through the valleys upon which the shadow of death has cast itself, be the physical death because of a virus, or be that the death of my business and my job, my life as I know it. The psalmist says, we fear no evil. His rod and staff are my comfort. He'll keep me. He'll provide for me. He'll bring me safely home. Life may not be easy. I will have to walk through many dark valleys, but I do so knowing he's with me and dwelling within and leading me by his spirit and his word to guide and comfort me, to keep my eyes not on a cloud, but on the cross and on my shepherd. So what do I have to be fearful of? You know, as I find my anxieties rising, see, I don't put my hope in the news or what the government might or might not do. I don't even put my hope in the NHS, great as they are. I put my hope in the one who is journeying with me. If my destination is sure and certain, and I have the Spirit of God dwelling within me. Do you see that connection? It's because he dwells that he can lead. And I can be confident and certain he'll look after me. His rod, his staff, protecting, sustaining, keeping me as he leads me safely home. Just as he did for the Israelites, so he will for me and for you and for each of us who is trusting Christ. How much more certain are we?